Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much and good morning. How would you like to live in a state or in a nation where there were no laws, where every man, woman, and child was free to do whatever he or she chose to do? I know many Americans act as if there were no traffic laws, but what if there were none? Do you honestly believe everyone would drive on the right side of the road, if there were a right side? We know there are road hogs because we have seen them in operation. But how would they act if there were no laws to govern their driving? Road rage has become a national disgrace, but it would be immeasurably worse if there were no traffic laws. What I have said about driving would surely be true of every other phase of living if there were no laws. Millions of Americans resent any law which inconveniences them. In one state where Molly and I live, there were game laws on the books, but they were almost totally ignored. In fact, one of my friends said to me on one occasion, "If an act is not illegal, immoral, or fattening, I have no interest in it." Some people are trying to make a joke when they use that kind of language. My friend was not. One of his greatest delights was hunting out of season, or hunting illegally. He told me of going to a fish hatchery in East Tennessee and catching the breeding stock by slipping a line down through his pockets and then bringing the trout back up his trouser legs. He was a very likable man, and we were good friends, but he had no respect for the law, any law, whether of God or man. If you would like to know how this anti-law attitude translates into destructive and diabolical conduct, read the Old Testament book of Judges. Please take note of this expression from that book. "In those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes." Judges 17:6. The same thought is repeated in Judges 21:25. The connection between there being no king or ruler in Israel and the Israelites doing whatever they pleased can hardly be missed. Every evil you can imagine proliferated during the period of the judges because there was no king in Israel. Many radical feminists in the United States belong in the no-law category. One feminist insisted that she was not just against socialism, communism, and capitalism. She was against all governments. She probably thinks that governments and laws are creations of patriarchy. Feminists are supposed to be against anything which smacks of patriarchy. Tragically, many of the beliefs and actions of the feminists have fostered disrespect for both civil and religious laws. But of this one fact you can be absolutely sure: if all laws were removed from our society, women and children would be the chief losers. Secular humanists would probably resent my saying this, but it needs to be said. Humanists have done great evil in our nation by their ethical beliefs. Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2 affirm: ethics is autonomous and situational, needing no theological or ideological sanction. Page 17. The word ethics means the science of right and wrong. The word autonomous literally means self-rule or self-law. I have already given you the biblical definition of autonomy. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Judges 17:6. The word situational means that nothing is right or wrong within itself. It all depends on the situation. Is it wrong to commit adultery and to lie about it? It depends on the situation. I am fully aware of many of the moral conditions we face in our country. I make a maximum effort to keep informed about beverage alcohol, gambling, abortion, physician-assisted suicide, and such activities. Do you honestly believe any of these immoral activities would get better if we followed the views of the humanists, which we are doing to some extent? would there be fewer murders, less abuse of alcohol and other drugs, fewer abortions and less gambling, if everyone believed that ethics is autonomous and situational. In many of our major cities, some areas are little more than jungles. Vicious crimes of all sorts are committed regularly. If we removed all laws, would any of this improve? The Bible provides great insight into many of the observations I have made and the questions I have raised. I invite your attention to these words from Paul's first letter to Timothy. But we know that the law is good, if a man use it lawfully, knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers, for whoremongers, for them who defile themselves with mankind, for men-stealers, for liars, for perjured persons. And if there be any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine, according to the glorious gospel of the blessed God, which was committed to our trust. 1 Timothy 1:8-11. In the preceding verses of 1 Timothy 1, Paul had severely criticized certain people for having swerved from the truth of the gospel and had turned aside to vain jangling. They desired to be teachers of the law, but did not understand what they were saying nor what they were affirming. 1 Timothy 1:6-7. We do not know who these teachers were, but we do know they had misunderstood the law and were misusing it for their own selfish purposes. Paul wanted Timothy and us to know that such misuse of the law is unacceptable. Controversies over the relationship of the law and the gospel have raged for 20 centuries. The Judaizers among the Galatian churches and elsewhere tried to bind certain rites and ceremonies on the church. Paul uncompromisingly opposed such teaching. He knew that keeping any of the Mosaic laws, such as circumcision and Sabbath keeping, obligated people to do the whole law. Galatians 5:1. But the law had been removed, nailed to the cross, and was not binding on anyone anymore. Colossians 2:14-17. If anyone sought to be justified by the law of Moses, he had fallen from grace. Christ had become of no effect. The cross of Christ was totally unnecessary. Galatians 5:4. Having said that we are not obligated to obey any of the specific laws of the Old Testament, we must surely understand that the law of God is good, if a man use it lawfully. And we must also understand that the law was man's schoolmaster to bring men unto Christ. But now that faith has come, we are no longer under the schoolmaster or tutor. Galatians 3:24-25. Using the law lawfully would refer to applying it in the way God meant for it to be applied. Using the law today to bind the specific commands on Christians would be using the law unlawfully, that is, contrary to the purpose for which God provided it. When Paul affirmed that the law is not made for a righteous man, he was not teaching that some men are so good they do not need any law. He was simply saying that if such a person existed, he would not need the law to restrain him from evil. Every human being on earth must have laws, both civil and religious, to prevent our doing wrong and to encourage us to do right. There were apparently some at Ephesus who did not understand that truth. Unfortunately, there are many in our world who do not understand or do not care. In their hearts, they are lawbreakers. In many cases, they would do far greater evil were it not for the laws of the land. So few of them know the laws of God, or would care if they did know them. I cannot overemphasize the absolute demand of God that we obey His laws, and that we obey the laws of the land, which do not come in conflict with His laws. Peter encouraged his readers, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or unto governors, as unto them who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers, and for the praise of them who do well. For so is the will of God, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. 1 Peter 2:14-15. Peter did make one notable exception to our duty to obey the laws of the land. We must obey God rather than men. Acts 5:29. There are people in every age and in every country who have little or no respect for the law. Paul refers to such men as the lawless and disobedient. The word lawless describes people who do not care what the law says. They take advantage of every means at their disposal to use the law for their own benefit, or they will break it at will. Tragically, there are millions of young people in our nation who know precious little about the law, and what they do know does not concern them. They are the ones who do the most of the drive-by shootings and most of the killings on our school campuses across the nation. According to the experts, unless some radical changes are made in our society, this contingency of hoodlums will get worse over the next few years. Dr. William Bennett and Dr. John DeLulio wrote an excellent book in 1996 with the title Body Count, in which they give a realistic view of the criminal activity in this country. The following paragraph ought to challenge every person in America. Based on all that we have witnessed, researched, and heard from people who are close to the action, here is what we believe. America is now home to thickening ranks of juvenile super predators, radically impulsive, brutally remorseless youngsters, including ever more preteenage boys who murder, assault, rape, rob, burglarize, deal deadly drugs, join gun-toting gangs, and create serious communal disorders. They do not fear the stigma of arrest, the pains of imprisonment, or the pangs of conscience. They perceive hardly any relationship between doing right or wrong now and being rewarded or punished for it later. To these mean street youngsters, the words right and wrong have no fixed meaning. Page 27. I agree with these distinguished scholars, but I have one observation to add. There are hundreds of thousands of adults, including many liberal theologians and academicians, to whom the words right and wrong have no fixed meaning. Could that help to explain why so many of our young people have no respect for the law? Dr. Bennett and Dr. DeLulio further state, "A new generation of street criminals is upon us, the youngest, biggest, baddest generation any society has ever known." Page 26. The law was also made for the disobedient. The Greek word rendered disobedient means insubordinate, unsubjected, rebellious, unruly. Do I need to tell you about the unruliness of millions of Americans, especially young people? When I began my high school teaching career in 1948 at Benton, Kentucky, the vast majority of our children and young people were respectful, obedient, and pleasant. They were a joy for me to know and to teach. I recall practically no serious incidents during the years when I taught in high school. But today, high school in the United States is a different ballgame. Many of our children are angry, arrogant, and dangerous. They not only attack fellow students, but they injure thousands of teachers every year in our country. Do these young people need laws? They certainly do, but they need much more than laws. They need parents, law enforcement officers, public officials, and judges who are not going to play games with their children and young people. We have, in most cases, good laws. They must be enforced if there are to be any changes in our society. Paul affirms that the law was made for the ungodly and for sinners. The word ungodly is a very common word in the New Testament. It comes from the Greek asabes and means lack of reverence for God. Paul used the word in the following passages from the Roman letter. But to him who works not, but believes on him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. Romans 4:5. For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. Romans 5:6. The law of God was designed to keep man from showing disrespect for the God who made us, and the one before whom we shall stand in the judgment. If man could be sinless, they would not need law of any kind, but that simply is not possible. So the law was made for sinners. Some form of the word sinner or sin is used 221 times in the New Testament. You can readily understand how very important the concept is to Christianity. We have all sinned and continually come short of the glory of God. Romans 3:23. God cannot endure sin in His presence. So He devised laws which define sin and erect barriers to sin's destructive power. We desperately need laws which describe the exceeding sinfulness of sin. Without God's law, we would not know what sin is. God's law was also made for the unholy and profane. God's demands for holiness appear throughout the Bible, both Old Testament and New. David asked in Psalm 15, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? And who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He then gives the qualities of holiness which were essential to abiding in God's presence. The Apostle Peter quoted these words from Leviticus 11:44-45. Be holy, for I am holy. 1 Peter 1:16. Peter used a different word for holiness, but the basic meaning is the same. Without God's perfect law, how would men know the difference between holy and unholy? The Greek word translated profane appears primarily in Paul's first letter to Timothy. The word means unhallowed, lawful to be trodden. Although the word profane does not appear in the following verse, the idea appears. He who despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sore a punishment, suppose you, shall he be thought worthy who has trodden underfoot the Son of God, and has counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and has done despite unto the Spirit of grace. Hebrews 10:28-29. The word profane involves treating the holy as if it were unholy. The law of God was designed to prevent murder. Obviously, it has not always done so, but that was God's intention when He gave the law. Paul affirms that the law was made for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers. When we read regularly of people who murder their own parents, should we not be able to see why men and women need to be taught the law of God? Is there anyone in America who has not read or heard about the Menendez brothers who brutally murdered their parents? These infamous brothers blamed the killing of their parents on parental abuse, both sexual and otherwise. But there is no legitimate excuse for killing one's parents. Besides, there is little doubt these brothers killed their parents to get their hands on the millions of dollars the parents had earned. Now for a very significant question. If physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia were legalized in the United States, would that not lay the foundation for more killing of parents? What if the parents are very wealthy, as in the Menendez case, and the parents become critically ill, but not necessarily terminally ill? If the children want their parents' money, would there not be a temptation to urge doctors to kill their parents? But doctors would not comply with such a request, would they? The vast majority of doctors would not. But what if some of the money were directed toward the doctor's bank account? Are you so naive as to believe some doctors would not kill for money, especially if the people they killed were old and near death? Would the wishes of the patients be the determining factor in all cases? You know they would not. if the price were high enough. If we as a people have any respect for the law of God, we are not going to allow our states to legalize euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide. Oh, we know these are already practiced in many hospitals across our land and in some foreign countries, such as the Netherlands. But God's law forbids killing. So do the laws of all civilized countries. Are we going to return to the law of the jungle? Are we going to be as cruel as some of the Eskimos who put their old people on ice floes and let them drift out in the ocean to die? Have we not learned anything from the barbarity of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis? The Germans killed and multiplied millions of Jews, Czechs, Poles, communists, homosexuals, and others, whom they thought were unworthy of life. In addition, they killed 275,000 of their own old people because Hitler said they were useless eaters. Is not Jack Kevorkian a modern Hitler? Are not those who support his actions just as evil as were the Nazis? My friends, we are standing at a crucial time in the history of the United States and of mankind in general. If we do not cease killing 1,500,000 babies each year, and if we do not stand against all forms of illegitimate killing, we shall be living in a jungle where no life is safe or sacred. Am I being unduly alarmist and dramatic? If you think I might be, do some research on what is occurring in the Netherlands. In Holland, about 5,000 old people and sick people are killed each year. Theoretically, euthanasia is not legal in Holland, but the government does not stop the killing. Many of those who are killed have not expressed the wish to die. The doctors and family members make the decision. If the one being killed is wealthy and is a burden to the family, you should have no trouble deciding about the motivation of those who approve of the killing. God's law clearly forbids such killing. Are we as a nation going to trample underfoot the laws on which our government is founded? When we do, and we have already done so in too many cases, we are going to have to reap the harvest of brutality, death, cruelty, and jungle mentality. There is hardly a town or city in the United States which has not already learned what occurs when children, young people, and older people have no moral values. Dr. William Bennett's and Dr. John DeLulio's book, Body Count, gives a number of examples of what occurs almost daily in every community in our nation. Two examples will have to suffice today. A Philadelphia jury convicted three suburban teens for third-degree murder for beating an altar boy to death with baseball bats in front of his church. Eddie Polek, 16, suffered 7 skull fractures on the steps of St. Cecilia's Catholic Church. The killing followed a fight between youths in 2 Philadelphia area neighborhoods after a rumored rape of a girl, which proved to be untrue. All the assailants were from Abington Township, a group of mostly affluent suburbs north of Philadelphia. Page 23. 4 young Milwaukee men charged in a recent crime spree that included gunshot murders at a Blockbuster video store and a liquor store had 92 prior arrests for armed robbery, burglary, battery, arson, weapons violations, theft, and other alleged violations, according to Milwaukee police records. One of the defendants, 24-year-old Willie Dorch, had 51 arrests alone, records show. The 4 defendants slipped through the cracks of the justice system, through plea bargains, early release from prison on parole, luck, and brazen arrogance, leaving them free to allegedly carry out numerous violent crimes outlined in criminal complaints, a check of police and criminal records showed. Page 84. Dr. Bennett and Dr. DeLulio believe that violent crime, drugs, and other criminal behavior result from what they call moral poverty, which they define to mean the poverty of being without loving, capable, responsible adults who teach the young right from wrong. It is the poverty of being without parents, guardians, relatives, friends, teachers, coaches, clergy, and others who habituate children to feel joy at others' joy, pain at others' pain, satisfaction when they do right, remorse when they do wrong. It is the poverty of growing up in the virtual absence of people who teach these lessons by their own everyday example, and who insist that you follow suit and behave accordingly. In the extreme, it is the poverty of growing up surrounded by deviant, delinquent, and criminal adults in a practically perfect criminogenic environment. That is, an environment that seems almost consciously designed to produce vicious, unrepentant, predatory street criminals. Page 14. What we must strive to do in this country is to stress in our schools, in churches, and everywhere else that human beings are of eternal value. We are made in the image of Almighty God. In truth, our God loved us so much that He sent His only Son to die that we might live with Him forever. If these truths are not stressed by our churches, by our families, and by other responsible adults in our society, we are in for some rough sledding. We thank you for listening. May God continue to bless and keep you.